This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents Ghosts of the Shadow Market, Book 5, A Deeper Love, by Cassandra Clare and Maureen Johnson. Read by Kiersey Clemens.
December 29th, 1940. I think first, Katerina said. Lemon cake. Oh, lemons. I think I miss them most. Katerina Loss and Tessa Gray were walking down Ludgate Hill, just passing the Old Bailey. This was a game they sometimes played. What will you eat first when this war is over? Of all the terrible things that were going on, sometimes the most ordinary ran the deepest. Food was rationed, and the rations were small. An ounce of cheese, 4 thin pieces of bacon, and 1 egg a week. Everything came in tiny amounts. Some things simply went away, like lemons. There were oranges sometimes. Tessa saw them at the fruit and veg market, but they were only for children, who could have one each. The nurses were fed at the hospital, but the portions were always tiny and never enough to keep up with all the work they performed. Tessa was lucky to have the strength she did. It was not all the physical strength of a shadow hunter, but some trace of angelic endurance lingered within her and sustained her. She had no idea how the mundane nurses kept up. "Or a banana," Katerina said. "I never liked them much before, but now that they are gone, I find myself craving them. That's always the way, isn't it?" Katerina Loss did not care about food. She barely ate at all, but she was making conversation as they walked down the street. This is what you did. You pretended life was normal, even as death rained from above. It was the London spirit. You kept to your routines as much as you could, even if you slept in a tube station at night for shelter, or you returned home to find the neighbor's house or yours was no longer there. Businesses tried to stay open, even if all the glass blew out of the windows or a bomb went through the roof. Some would put out signs that said, "More open than usual." You carried on. You talked about bananas and lemons. At this point in December, London was at its darkest. The sun went down just after 3 in the afternoon. Because of the air raids, London was under blackout orders every night. Blackout curtains blocked light from every window, street lamps were turned off, cars dimmed their lights. People walked the streets carrying their flashlights to find their way through the velvety darkness. All of London was shade and corner and nook, every alley blind, every wall a dark blank. It made the city mysterious and mournful. To Tessa, it felt like London itself grieved for her will, felt his loss, turned out every light. Tessa Gray had not particularly enjoyed Christmas this year. It was difficult to enjoy things with the Germans raining bombs overhead whenever the whim suited them. The Blitz, as it was called, was designed to bring terror to London, to force the city to its knees. There were deadly bombs that could crush a home, leaving a pile of smoking rubble where children once slept and families laughed together. In the mornings, you would see walls missing and the inner workings of houses exposed like a doll's house. Scraps of cloth flapping against broken brick, toys and books scattered in piles of rubble. More than once she saw a bathtub hanging off the side of what remained of a house. Extraordinary things would happen, like the house where the chimney fell, smashing through the kitchen table where a family ate, shattering it but harming no one. Buses would be upturned. Rubble would fall, instantly killing one family member, leaving the other stunned and unscathed. It was a matter of chance, of inches. There was nothing worse than being left alone, the one you loved ripped from you. Did you have a good visit this afternoon? Katerina asked. The younger generation are still trying to talk me into leaving, Tessa replied, stepping around a hole in the pavement where part of it had been blown away. They think I should go to New York. They're your children, Katerina said gently. They want what's best for you. They don't understand. When Will died, Tessa had known there could be no place for her among the Shadow Hunters. For a time, it had seemed as if there was no place for her in all the world, with so much of her heart in the cold ground. Then Magnus Bane had taken Tessa into his home when she was almost mad with grief, and when Tessa slowly emerged, Magnus's friends, Katerina Loss and Ragnar Fell, encircled her. No one understood the pain of being immortal save another immortal. She could only be grateful they had taken her in. It was Katerina who introduced Tessa to nursing when the war broke out. Katerina had always been a healer, of Nephilim, of downworlders, of humans. Wherever she was needed, she went. She had nursed in the last great war, only 20 years before, the war that was never supposed to happen again. The two of them had taken a small flat off of Farrington Street, close to the London Institute and to St. Bart's Hospital. It was not as luxurious as her previous homes, just a small second-story walk-up with a shared bath in the hall. It was easier this way, and cozier. Tessa and Katerina shared one small bedroom, hanging a sheet down the middle for privacy. They often worked at night and slept during the day. At least the raids were only at night now. No more sirens and planes and bombs and anti-aircraft guns at noon. The war caused increased demonic activity, as all wars did. Demons taking advantage of chaos caused by battle, which was almost overwhelming the Shadow Hunters. Though it was a terrible thought to have, Tessa regarded the war as a kind of personal blessing. Here, she could be useful. One of the good things about being a nurse was that there was always something that needed doing. Always. Constant activity kept grief at bay because there was no time to think. Going to New York, sitting in safety, would be hellish. There would be nothing to do but think about her family. She did not know how to do this. How to go on agelessly as her descendants grew older than her. She looked up at the great dome of St. Paul's Cathedral, lording over the city exactly as it had done for hundreds of years. How did it feel, seeing its city below, its sprawling child blown to pieces? Tessa, Katerina said. I'm fine, Tessa replied, quickening her step. At that moment, a scream broke out all over the city. The air raid siren. Moments later came the humming noise. It sounded like the approach of an army of angry bees. The Luftwaffe was overhead. The bombs would be falling soon. I thought we might be spared for a few more days, Katerina said grimly. It was so nice to only have 2 air raids this week. I suppose even the Luftwaffe wants to celebrate the holiday. The two quickened their steps. Then it came. That uncanny sound. As the bombs fell, they whistled. Tessa and Katerina stopped. The whistling was just above them, all around. The whistling was not the problem. The problem was when it stopped. The silence meant the bombs were less than 100 feet overhead. That's when you waited. Were you going to be next? Where could you go when death was silent and came from the sky? There was a clanking and a hissing sound up ahead, and the street was suddenly illuminated with spitting phosphorescent light. Incendiaries, Katerina said. Tessa and Katerina rushed forward. The incendiary bombs were canisters that looked harmless enough up close, similar to a long thermal flask. When they hit the ground, they spread fire. They were being scattered all up and down the street by the planes, highlighting the road and spitting flames at the buildings. The fire wardens began running from all directions, dampening the incendiaries as quickly as possible. Katerina bent down to one. Tessa saw a blue flash, then the bomb extinguished. Tessa ran up to another and stamped at the sparks until a fire warden poured a bucket of water over it. But now there were hundreds all over the road.
"Must get on," Katerina said. "It looks to be a long one tonight."
Passing Londoners tipped their hats. They saw what Tessa and Katerina wanted them to see. Just two brave young nurses headed to the hospital. Not two immortal beings trying to stem an endless tide of suffering. On the other side of the Thames, a figure was making its way through the dark beneath the viaduct, past where the normally flourishing borough market was held by day. Usually, this place was heaving with activity and scraps of the day's market. Tonight, everything was muted, and there was barely anything remaining on the ground. Every old cabbage and bruised piece of fruit had been plucked up by hungry people. The blackout curtains, lack of streetlight, and the absence of mundanes on the streets made this corner of London foreboding, but the cloaked figure walked without hesitation. Even as the air raid siren ripped through the night, his destination was just around the corner. Even with the war, the shadow market went on, though it was fragmentary. Like the mundanes with their ration cards, their limited supplies of food, of clothing, and even of bath water, things here were in short supply. The old book stalls had been picked through. Instead of hundreds of potions and powders, only a dozen or so graced the vendors' tables. The sparkle in the fire was nothing compared to the flames that raged on the opposite bank, or the machines that dropped death from the sky. So there seemed little point in putting on light shows. The children still ran about. The young werewolves, the street children and orphans who had been turned in the dark corners of the blackout and now roamed, seeking nourishment and parental guidance. A small vampire, turned far too young, trailed alongside Brother Zachariah, pulling on his cloak for fun. Zachariah did not disturb him. The child looked lonely and dirty, and if it pleased him to trail a silent brother, then Zachariah would allow it.
"What are you?" said the little boy.
"A kind of shadow hunter," Brother Zachariah replied.
"Did you come to kill us? I heard that's what they do."
"No, that is not what we do. Where is your family?"
"Gone," the little boy said. "A bomb dropped on us, and my master came and got me."
It had been all too easy to pluck these little ones out of the wreckage of a home, take them by the hand to some pitch-black alley, and turn them. Demon activity, too, was at an all-time high. After all, who could tell whether that torn limb was from someone killed by a bomb or someone ripped apart by a demon? Did it make a difference? Mundanes had their own demonic ways. A crowd of other vampire children ran past, and the little boy ran off with them. The sky roared, thick with the sound of planes. Brother Zachariah listened to the noise of the bombing with a musician's ear. The bombs whistled when they dropped, but there was that strange punctuating silence as they neared the earth. Silences and music were as important as sound. In this case, the silences told so much of the story to come. Tonight, the bombs were falling on the other side of the river like rain, a thundering symphony with too many notes. Those bombs would be falling near the Institute, near St. Bart's Hospital where Tessa worked. Fear for her ran through Zachariah, cold as the river cutting across the city. In these empty days since Will's death, emotion was a rare visitor for him, but when it came to Tessa, feeling always bloomed.
"Bad one tonight," said a fairy woman with silver-scaled skin who sold enchanted toy toads. They leapt about on her table, protruding golden tongues.
"Like a toad?"
She pointed at one of the toy toads. It turned blue, then red, then green, then flipped on its back and spun before turning into a stone. Then it burst forth into toad form again, and the cycle continued. "No, thank you," Zachariah said. He turned to keep moving, but the woman spoke again. "He's waiting for you," she said.
"Who is he?"
"The one you have come to meet." For months now, he had been slowly trailing a series of contacts through the fairy world, trying to find out about the lost Herondales he had learned of at the Shadow Market and Carnival in Tennessee. He had not come specifically to meet anyone tonight. He had a number of contacts who provided information as they came by it, but someone had come to meet him.
"Thank you," he said politely. "Where am I to go?"
"The King's Head Yard," she said, smiling widely. Her teeth were small and pointed. Brother Zachariah nodded. The King's Head Yard was a nearby alley, a horseshoe-shaped offshoot of Borough High Street. It was accessed through an arch between the buildings. As he approached it, he heard the sound of planes overhead, then the whistling of a payload being dropped. Nothing to do but keep going. Zachariah crossed under the archway, where his steps echoed back at him in the relative quiet. He walked in partway, then stopped. "I am here," he said to the darkness.
"Shadow Hunter," a voice said.
From the bend at the end of the yard, a figure emerged. It was a fairy, and clearly one of the court. He was extremely tall, almost human in appearance but for his wings, which were brown and white and spread wide, almost touching the opposite walls.
"I understand you wish to speak to me," Brother Zachariah said politely.
The fairy stepped closer, and Zachariah could see a copper mask in the form of a hawk covering the top half of his face.
"You've been interfering," the fairy said.
"In what, precisely?" Zachariah inquired.
He did not move back, but he tightened his grip on his staff.
"Things that do not concern you."
"I have been making inquiries about a lost Shadow Hunter family. That is very much something that concerns me."
"You come to my brethren? You ask the Fae?"
This was true. Since his encounter with Belial at the carnival in Tennessee, Brother Zachariah had been pursuing many leads in fairy. He had seen, after all, a Herondale descendant with a fairy wife and child. They had fled as soon as he recognized them, but it had not been him they feared. Whatever danger threatened the lost Herondale, Zachariah had learned it came from fairy.
"What is it you know?"
the fairy asked, stepping forward.
"I would advise you not to come closer.
You have no idea of the danger of what you seek. This is fairy business. Cease your meddling in that which affects our lands and our lands alone."
"I repeat," Zachariah said calmly, though his grip on the staff was firm now. "I ask of shadow hunters. That is very much my business."
"Then you do so at your peril."
A blade flashed in the fairy's hand. He swung at Zachariah, who moved at once, rolling to the ground and coming up next to the fairy, striking his arm and knocking the sword free. The whistling of the bombs had stopped. That meant they were right overhead. Then they fell. Three of them clanked down on the stones at the opening of the archway and began spitting their phosphorescent flames. This distracted the fairy for just a moment, and Zachariah took the opportunity to dash around to the other side of the horseshoe and out the other side. He had no desire to continue this fight, to cause problems between the Silent Brothers and the Fae. Zachariah had no idea why the fairy had become so violent. Hopefully he would simply return from whence he came. Zachariah slipped onto the Borough High Street, dodging the falling cylinders, but he had barely begun his flight when the fairy was behind him. Zachariah spun, his staff ready.
"I have no quarrel with you.
Let us go our separate ways.
Below the hawk mask, the fairy's teeth were gritted. He sliced out with his sword, ripping the air in front of Brother Zachariah, slashing his cloak. Zachariah leapt and spun, his staff wheeling through the air to slam against the sword. As they fought, the canisters landed closer and closer, coughing fire. Neither flinched. Brother Zachariah took care not to injure the fairy, only to block the attack. His purpose must remain secret, but the fairy was coming with increasing force. He slashed upward with his sword, meaning to cut Zachariah's throat, and Zachariah smashed it from his hands, sending it flying across the road.
Let us finish with this. Call it a fair fight ended. Walk away.
The fairy was out of breath. Blood trickled from a wound at his temple.
As you wish, he said. But take my warning.
He turned to go. Brother Zachariah loosened his grip on his staff for just a moment. The fairy turned back, a short blade in his hand aimed at Zachariah's heart. With the speed of the Silent Brothers, he whirled away, but he could not move fast enough. The blade sunk deep into his shoulder and came out the other side.
The pain.
The wound immediately began to hiss as if acid was dissolving Zachariah's flesh. Pain and numbness ran down his arm, causing him to drop his staff. He staggered back, and the fairy retrieved his sword and advanced toward him.
You've interfered with the fate for the last time, Grigori, he said. Our people are our people, and our enemies, they will never be yours.
The incendiaries landed around them now, clanking loudly against pavement and cobblestone, flashing light and licking flames at the buildings. Zachariah tried to get away, but his strength was fading. He could not run. He could only stagger drunkenly. This was no normal wound. There was poison flooding his body. The fairy was coming at him, and he would not get away.
No, not without seeing Tessa one more time.
He looked down and saw one of the incendiaries that had fallen from the sky. This one had not detonated. Brother Zachariah used the last of his strength to spin around, swinging out with the canister. Small bombs were still falling. Several more dropped nearby. The canister flew through the air and struck the fairy in the chest. It cracked apart, and the fairy shrieked as the iron inside was released. Zachariah fell to his knees as the iron flame burned. The hospital was rumbling. At St. Bart's, the upper floors of the hospital were considered too unsafe to use. The activity was all on the lower level and in the basement, where doctors and nurses ran to attend the injured and sick. The fire wardens were being brought in, their skin covered in soot, gasping for air. There were injuries from the attacks, the burns, the crushings, the people cut through with exploding glass or struck by debris. Plus, all the normal business of London went on. People still had babies and became ill and had normal accidents, but the war multiplied incidents. People fell or crashed in the dark. There were heart attacks as bombs came down. There were so many people who needed help. From the moment they arrived, Katerina and Tessa ran from one end of the hospital to the other, tending to the injured as they came in, fetching supplies, carrying bloodied bowls of water, wrapping and removing bandages. Being a shadow hunter, Tessa could easily cope with some of the grislier aspects of the job, like the fact that no matter how hard you tried to keep your apron clean, you would be covered in blood and grime within minutes. No amount of washing got it out. No sooner would you scrub it off your arms than another patient would come in and your skin would be covered again. Through it all, the nurses strove to maintain an air of calm competence. You moved quickly, but not hastily. You spoke loudly when you needed assistance, but you never screamed. Tessa was stationed by the door, directing the orderlies as they brought in a dozen new patients. They were bringing in groups of fire wardens now, some walking wounded, others on stretchers. Over there, Tessa said as the orderlies carried in burn victims. To Sister Loss.
I've got one asking for you, sister,
said the orderly, setting down a stretcher with a figure on it wrapped tight in a gray blanket.
Coming, Tessa said.
She hurried to the stretcher and bent down. The blanket was pulled partway over the man's face.
You're all right, Tessa said, pulling back the blanket. You're all right now. You're at hospital. You're here at St. Bart's.
It took her a moment to realize what she was seeing. The marks on his skin were not all wounds. And his face, though covered in soot and streaked with blood, was more familiar to her than her own.
Tessa, Jem said,
the echo deep inside her head like the memory of a bell ringing. Then he went limp.
Jem!
It couldn't be. She seized at his hand, hoping she was dreaming, that the war had addled her sense of reality completely. But the slim, scarred hand in hers was familiar, even limp and without strength.
This was Jem. Her Jem, dressed in the bone-colored robes of a silent brother, the marks on his neck pulsing as his heart pumped furiously. His skin burned under her touch.
He's in a bad way, the orderly said. I'll fetch the doctor.
No,
Tessa said quickly. Leave him with me. Jem was glamored, but he could not be examined. No mundane doctor could do anything about his injuries, and they would be shocked at his wounds, his scars, even his blood. She tore away the parchment robes. It took her only a moment to find the source of the trauma, a massive wound in his shoulder that went clean through. The wound was black with a silvery edge, and his tunic was saturated with blood all the way down to his waist. Tessa scanned the hallway. There were so many people, she could not immediately see Katerina. She could not scream.
Jem, she said into his ear, I am here. I am getting help.
She stood up, as calmly as she could, and hastily made her way through the chaos of the hall, her heart beating so fast she felt like it might come up her throat and through her mouth. She found Katerina working on the burned man, her hands on his wounds. Only Tessa could see the snow-white glow emanating from under the blanket as she worked.
Sister Loss, she said, trying to control her voice. I need you at once.
Just a moment, Katerina said.
It cannot wait.
Katerina looked over her shoulder. Then the glow stopped.
You should feel better in a moment, she said to the man. One of the other sisters will be over very soon.
I feel better already, the man said, feeling his arm in wonder. Tessa hurried Katerina back to Jem. Katerina, seeing Tessa's taut expression, asked no questions. She only bent down and pulled the blanket back. She looked up at Tessa.
A shadow hunter,
Katerina said in a low voice.
Here.
Quickly, Tessa said. Help me move him. Tessa took the end of the stretcher and Katerina the other side, and they moved Jem down the hallway. There was another explosion, closer. The building pulsed from the impact. The lights swung and went out for a moment, causing cries of alarm and confusion. Tessa froze in place, assuring herself that the ceiling wasn't about to come down and bury them all. After a moment, the lights came back on, and movement continued.
Come on,
Tessa said. There was a small room at the end of the hall that was used for the nurses' tea breaks and naps or when they could not return home because of bombings. They set Jem's stretcher gently on the empty cot on the side of the room. Jem was lying quietly, his features still, his breathing jagged. The color was draining from his skin.
Hold the light, Katerina said. I need to examine this.
Tessa pulled a witch light from her pocket. It was safer and more reliable, but she could only use it in private. Katerina grabbed a pair of shears and cut away the cloth around the tunic to expose the wound. The veins on Jem's chest and his arm had turned black.
What is that?
Tessa said, her voice shaking.
It looks very bad.
I haven't seen this in a long time, Katerina said. I think it's a cataplasm.
What is that?
Nothing good,
Katerina said.
Be patient.
She must be mad, Tessa thought. Be patient? How could she be patient? This was Jem, not some nameless patient under a gray blanket. But every nameless patient was precious to someone.
She forced herself to breathe more deeply.
Take his hand, Katerina said. It will work better if you do it. Think of him, who he is to you. Give him your strength.
Tessa had practiced a small amount of warlock magic before, though she was not advanced. As Katerina watched, Tessa took Jem's slender hand in her own. She curled her fingers around his violinist's fingers, remembering the care with which he had played, the time he had composed for her. His voice echoed in her heart. People still use the expression she in to mean close friends or soulmates, but what it really means is understanding music. When I played, you saw what I saw. You understand my music. Tessa smelled burned sugar. She felt Jem's lips hot against hers, the carpet underneath them, his arms holding her against his heart. Oh, my Jem. His body surged against the stretcher, his back arching. He gasped, and the sound sent a shock through Tessa. Jem had been silent so long.
Can you hear us? Katerina asked.
I can,
came the halting reply in Tessa's mind.
You need the Silent Brothers, Katerina said. I cannot go to my brothers with this.
If you do not go to them, you will die, Katerina said. The words hit Tessa like a blow.
It is not possible for me to go to the Bone City like this. I came here hoping you might be able to help.
This is no time for pride, Katerina said sternly.
It is not pride, Jem said.
Tessa knew this was the truth. He was the least proud person she had ever known.
Jem,
Tessa begged.
You must go.
Katerina started.
This is James Carstairs.
Of course Katerina knew the name of Will Herondale's parabatai, though she had never met him. She did not understand all that had passed between Tessa and Jem. She did not know that they had been engaged to be married. That before there was a Tessa and Will, there had been a Tessa and Jem. Tessa did not speak of these things because of Will, and then because of the absence of Will.
I have come here because it is the only place I can go, Jem said. To speak the truth to the brothers would be to endanger another life than mine. I will not do it.
Tessa looked to Katerina in desperation.
He means it, she said. He will never seek help if it means someone else will be hurt.
Katerina, he cannot die. He cannot die.
Katerina inhaled sharply and opened the door a crack to peer into the hall.
We will need to get him back to the flat, she said. I can't work on him here. I don't have what I need. Get our cloaks. We will need to move quickly.
Tessa seized hold of Jem's stretcher. She understood the complications involved. They were nurses in charge of many sick people who would be pouring in during the attack. The city was being bombed. It was on fire. Getting home was not a simple matter. But it was what they were going to do. The city they stepped back out into was not the same one that it had been only an hour before. The air was so hot that breathing burned the lungs. A high wall of orange jumped out of the buildings around them, and the silhouette of St. Paul's stood out in intense relief. The scene was at once terrifying and almost beautiful, like a dream image from Blake, a poet her son James had always loved. On what wings dare he aspire? What the hand dare seize the fire? But there was no time to think of things like London burning. There were two ambulances right outside on the street. Next to one, a driver was having a cigarette and talking to a fire warden.
Charlie,
Katerina called. The man tossed his cigarette aside and came running over.
We need your help, she said. This man has an infection. We can't keep him in the ward here.
You need me to take him to St. Thomas's, sister. The going will be rough. We've got fires in almost every street.
We can't make it that far, Katerina said. We've got to move him quickly. Our flat is just on Farrington Street. That will have to do for now.
All right, sister. Let's get him in the ambulance.
He opened the back and assisted them in getting Jem inside.
I'll be back in one moment, Katerina said to them. I just need to get a few supplies.
She dashed back into the hospital. Tessa climbed into the back with Jim, and Charlie got into the driver's seat.
Don't usually take patients to nurses' flats, but needs must when the devil drives.
Sister Loss always looks after them. When my Mabel was having our second, she had a terrible spell. I thought we was gonna lose them both. Sister Loss, bless her, she saved them both. I wouldn't have Mabel or my Eddie without them. Whatever she needs.
Tessa had heard many stories like this. Katerina was both a warlock and a mundane nurse with over 100 years of experience. She had nursed in the last great war. Old soldiers were always coming up to her and saying how she was the spitting image of that nurse who saved me in the last one. But of course she couldn't be. That was 20 years ago, and Katerina was still so young. Katerina stood out to them because of her dark skin. They did not see a blue woman with white hair. They saw a nurse from the West Indies. She had faced considerable prejudice, but it was clear that not only was Katerina a good nurse, she was the best nurse in all of London. Anyone who got Katerina as a nurse was considered lucky. Even the most miserable bigot desired to live, and Katerina nursed all who came to her with equanimity. She could not save them all, but there were always a few, at least one a day, who survived something unsurvivable because Sister Loss was at their side. Some called her the Angel of St. Bart's. Jem stirred and groaned lightly.
Don't you worry, mate, Charlie called back to him. Best nurses in the city, this lot. You couldn't be in safer hands.
Jem tried to smile, but instead he coughed a bad, burbling cough that came with a trickle of blood from the side of his mouth. Tessa immediately wiped it away with the edge of her cloak and leaned close to him. You hold on, James Carstairs, she said, trying to sound brave. She gripped his hand in hers. She had forgotten how wonderful it was to hold Jem's hand, his long, graceful hands, the ones that could produce such beautiful music from the violin. Jem, she whispered, leaning low, you must hold on. You must. We'll need you to. I need you to. Jem's hand tightened on hers. Katerina came running out of the hospital carrying a small canvas bag. She leapt into the back of the ambulance, slamming the doors behind her and snapping Tessa back.
Go, Charlie, she said.
Charlie shifted the ambulance into gear, and they started forward. Overhead, the drone of the Luftwaffe was back, like the hum of an army of bees. Katerina immediately scooted next to Jem and passed Tessa a bandage to unwind. The ambulance juddered and Jem was jolted on his stretcher. Tessa tented herself over him to keep him in place.
Katerina, Tessa said.
What is this?
What's happened to him?
It looks to me like a cataplasm, Katerina said quietly. It's a rare belladonna concentrate with demon poison added in. Until I can get the antidote in, we need to try to keep it from spreading in his bloodstream, or at least slow it down. We're going to tie some tourniquets, start cutting off blood flow.
This sounded incredibly dangerous. By tying off the limbs, they could be risking their loss. But Katerina knew what she was doing.
This will not be comfortable, Katerina said, unwinding a bandage. But it will help him. Hold him.
Tessa pressed her body down on Jem a bit more as Katerina looped the bandage around the injured arm and shoulder. She made a knot, then grabbed the ends of the bandages and pulled tight. Jem arched against Tessa's chest.
You're all right, Jem, she said. You're all right. We're here.
I'm here. It's me, Tessa. It's me.
Tessa, he said.
The word came out like a question. He writhed as Katerina wound the bandage tightly around the shoulder and arm. A mundane would not have been able to withstand it. Jem was barely able to. Sweat broke out all over his face.
It's going to be rough going, sisters, Charlie called back. They're trying to burn down St. Paul's, the bastards. I'm going to have to go around the long way. It's fires everywhere.
Charlie did not exaggerate.
In front of them was a view of solid orange against the black silhouettes of burning buildings. The fires were so high that it was like there was a sun rising up out of the earth, dragging day out of the ground. As they drove on, it was like they were pressing into a solid wall of heat. The wind had quickened, and now fire was meeting fire, creating walls instead of pockets. The air shimmered and cooked. Several times they turned down streets that no longer seemed to be there anymore.
"It's no good this way either," Charlie said, turning the ambulance again. "I'll have to try another way."
Then came the sharp whistling in the air. This time the pitch was different. These were not the incendiary bombs. These were the large explosives. After the fires, the idea was to kill. Charlie stopped the ambulance and craned his head to look up to see where the bomb was likely to land. They all froze, listening to the whistle go quiet. The silence meant the bomb was less than 100 feet above you and coming fast. It was a long moment. Then it came. The impact was at the other end of the street, sending the shockwave down the road and a spray of rubble into the air. Charlie started on again.
"Bastards," he said under his breath. "Bloody bastards."
"You're right there, sisters."
"We're fine," Katerina said.
She had both hands on Jem's shoulder and there was a low blue glow around the bandages. She was holding it back, whatever it was that was going through Jem's body. They had just made another turn when there was another whistle and another silence. They stopped again. The impact was to their right this time, down at the corner. The ambulance rocked as the corner of a building was blown away. The ground shook. Charlie turned the ambulance away from it.
"Not gonna get through this way," he said. "I'll try down Shoe Lane."
The ambulance turned once more. On the stretcher, Jem had stopped moving. Tessa could not tell if the pulsing heat was coming from the air or from Jem's body. There was fire on both sides of the street here, but the path looked almost clear to get through. There were two fire wardens in the road, shooting water into a burning warehouse. Suddenly, there was a creaking sound. The fire began to arc over the road.
"Blimey," Charlie said.
"Hang on tight, sisters."
The ambulance ground into reverse and started speeding backwards down the alley. Tessa heard a crackling noise, uncanny, almost merry, a great tinkling. Then all at once the bricks of the building exploded and the building tumbled down into a mass of fire and rubble, the flames blowing up in a mighty roar. The men with the hose vanished.
"God almighty," Charlie said, grinding the ambulance to a halt.
He jumped out of the driver's seat and started running for the men, two of whom were stumbling out of the flames. Katerina looked up and out the windscreen.
"Those men," she said. "The building's come down on them."
"You must help them," Jem said.
Katerina looked between Jem and Tessa for a moment. Tessa felt herself full of an unbearable anxiety. She had to get Jem to safety, and yet in front of them men were being consumed in flame.
"I will be quick," Katerina said, and Tessa nodded.
Alone in the ambulance, Tessa looked down at Jem.
"If they need you, then you must go," Jem said.
"They need Katerina," Tessa said.
"You need me, and I need you. I do not leave you. No matter what happens, I do not leave you." The ambulance was heating up like an oven, trapped as it was between multiple fires. There was no water to cool Jem's brow, so Tessa mopped it and fanned it with her hand. After a minute, Katerina opened the back of the ambulance. She was covered in soot and water.
"I have done what I can," she said. "They will live now, as long as they reach the hospital. Charlie will have to take the ambulance."
Her eyes reflected her pain.
"Yes," Jem said.
Somehow he had found enough strength to rise on his elbows.
"You must get them to safety. I am a shadow hunter. I am stronger than those men."
He had always been strong. It was not because he was a shadow hunter. It was because he had a will fierce as starlight, burning in darkness and refusing to be put out. Charlie brought the wounded fire wardens over, carrying one over his shoulder.
"You'll be all right, sisters," he said. "You can ride back with me."
"No,"
Katerina said,
climbing inside to help Tessa get Jem to his feet. Tessa placed herself under Jem's wounded shoulder. He winced from the movement. It was clear Jem couldn't really walk, but had decided that he would do it anyway. He got his body into a standing position through sheer will. Katerina hurried to prop him up on one side, and Tessa took the other, giving over her full strength to support him completely. It was strange, feeling Jem's body against hers after so long. They got out of the lane and back onto the road.
"Lovely night for a walk," Jem said,
clearly trying to cheer her. He was sweating all over and could no longer hold up his head. His legs had gone limp. He was like a marionette with the strings gone slack. The path Charlie had driven had taken them past where they lived, so they had to backtrack down the lane. The buildings all around were on fire as well, but the fire was still contained inside. Tessa was covered in sweat and the temperature was cooking them. The air was swollen with heat and every mouthful of air scorched its way down her throat. It felt like when she first learned to change herself. The exquisite, strange pain. The street was narrowing now to the point where they could barely walk three abreast. Katerina's and Tessa's sides scraped the hot walls. Jem's feet now dragged along the ground, no longer able to take any steps. When they emerged onto Fleet Street, Tessa gasped in the relatively cool air. The sweat on her face was chilled for a moment.
"Come,"
Katerina said, leading them toward a bench.
"Let's get him down for a moment."
They gingerly rested Jem on the empty bench. His skin was slick with sweat. The wound had soaked through his tunic. Katerina pulled the shirt open to expose his chest and cool him, and Tessa could see the runes of the Silent Brothers on his skin and his veins throbbing in his throat.
"I don't know how much farther we can get him in this state," Katerina said. "The effort is too much."
Once on the bench, Jem's limbs began to jerk and twitch as the poison moved through his body once more. Katerina set to work on him again, putting her hands on the wound. Tessa scanned the road. She made out a large shadow coming in their direction, with two dimmed lights like heavily lidded eyes. A bus. A great double-decker red London bus was making its way through the night because nothing stopped the London buses. Not even a war. They were not at a stop, but Tessa jumped into the road and waved it down. The driver opened the door and called out.
"Your sister's all right," he said. "Your friend, he doesn't look so good."
"He's injured," Katerina said.
"Then you get yourselves inside, sisters,"
the driver said, shutting the door after they had done so, dragging Jem between them.
"You've got London's best private ambulance at your service. Do you want to go to St. Bart's?"
"We've come from there. It's full. We're taking him home to care for him, and we need to go quickly."
"Then give me the address, and that's where we'll go."
Katerina shouted their address over the sound of another slightly more distant explosion, and they got Jem over to a seat. It was instantly clear that he would not be able to hold himself sitting up, as he was too exhausted from the effort of trying to walk. They rested him on the ample floor of the bus and sat next to him on either side.
"Only in London," Jem said, smiling weakly. "Would a bus keep making its rounds during a massive bombing?"
"Keep calm and carry on," Katerina said,
feeling Jem's pulse.
"There now. We'll be at the flat in no time."
Tessa could tell from the way Katerina was becoming more and more chipper in tone that things were getting worse quickly. The bus could not go at a high speed. It was still a London bus on a dark night during an air raid, but it was going faster than any bus she had ever encountered. Tessa had no illusions about the safety of the bus. She had seen one of these flipped over completely after a hit, lying in the road like an elephant on its back. But they were moving, and Jem was resting on the floor, his eyes closed. Tessa looked at the advertisements on the walls. Happy images of people using Bisto gravy next to posters telling people to get their children out of London for safety. London would not give up. And neither would Tessa. They had another piece of good luck back at the flat. Tessa and Katerina lived in the upstairs of a small house. Their neighbors, it seemed, had gone to the shelters, so there was no one else in the house to see them dragging a bleeding man up the steps.
"The bathroom," Katerina said as they set Jem down on the dark landing.
Fill the tub with water. Lots of it, cold. I'll get my supplies.
Tessa ran to the bathroom in the hall, praying that the water had not been disrupted by the bombing. Relief washed over her as water flowed from the tap. They were only allowed to have 5 inches in the bath, which was enforced by a line painted around the inside of the tub. Tessa ignored this. She opened the window wide. There was some cool air coming from the direction away from the fires. She hurried down the hall. Katerina had removed Jem's tunic, leaving his chest bare. She had taken off the bandages and the wound was exposed and angry, the black marks tracing along his veins once again.
"Get his other side," Katerina said.
Together, they lifted Jem up. He was dead weight as they maneuvered him down the hall and carefully put him into the tub. Katerina positioned him so that his wounded arm and shoulder hung over the side, then reached into her apron pocket and removed 2 vials. She poured the contents of one into the water, turning it a light blue. Tessa knew better than to ask if Katerina thought he was going to survive. He was going to survive because they would make sure of it. Also, you didn't ask those sorts of questions if you were concerned about the answers.
"Keep sponging him," Katerina said. "We need to keep him cool."
Tessa got down on her knees and drenched the sponge, then ran the blue-tinted water over Jem's head and chest. It smelled of a strange combination of sulfur and jasmine, and it seemed to lower his temperature. Katerina rubbed the contents of the other vial on her hands and began working at the wound, and his arm and chest, massaging the spreading darkness back toward the opening. Jem's head lulled back, his breathing rough. Tessa swabbed his forehead, reassuring him all the while. They did this for an hour. Tessa soon forgot the sound of the bombs outside, or the smoke or burning debris that drifted in. Everything was the motion of the water and the sponge. Jem's skin, his face twisted in pain, then going still and slack. Both Katerina and Tessa were drenched, and there was water pooling on the floor around them.
"Will,"
Jem said, and the voice in Tessa's head was lost but seeking.
"Will,
is that you?"
Tessa fought back the lump in her throat as Jem smiled at nothing. If he saw Will, let him see Will. Maybe Will was here after all, come to help his parabatai.
"Will,"
Tessa thought to herself, "if you are here, you must help. I cannot lose him too, Will. Together we will save him." Perhaps she imagined it, but Tessa felt something guiding her arm as she worked. She was stronger now. Jem suddenly lurched in the water and came halfway out of the tub, his back arching into a shape that could not have been possible and sending his head under.
"Grab him," Katerina said. "Don't let him hurt himself. This is the worst of it."
Together, and with whatever force was aiding Tessa, they grabbed Jem as he writhed and screamed. Because he was wet, they had to wrap themselves around his limbs to try to prevent him from flailing, from bashing his head against the tiles. He knocked Katerina loose and she fell to the floor and smashed her head into the wall, but she came back and got her arms around his chest again. Jem's screams blended with the chaos of the night. The water splashed and the smoke blew in. Jem begged for Yin Fen. He kicked so hard that Tessa was thrown back against the sink. Then, all at once, he stopped moving completely and fell back into the tub. He looked lifeless. Tessa crawled back across the wet floor and reached for him.
"Jem."
"Katerina."
"He's alive,"
Katerina said, her chest heaving as she caught her breath. She had her fingers on his wrist.
"We've done all we can do here. Let's get him into bed. We'll know soon."
The all clear rang out across London just after 11, but there was nothing clear or safe. The Luftwaffe may have returned home, and the bombs may have stopped falling for a few hours, but the fires only increased. The wind fueled and propelled them. The air was rank with burning soot and flying scraps of debris, and London glowed. They had moved Jem into the little bedroom. The rest of his wet clothing had to be removed. Tessa had dressed and undressed countless men at this point,
and Jim was a silent brother, for whom intimacy was impossible. Perhaps she should have been able to do it with calm professionalism, but she could not be a nurse with Jim. She had thought once that she would see him, that they would see each other naked on their wedding night. This was too intimate and strange. This was not how Jim would want Tessa to see him, like that, for the first time. So she left the task to Katerina, the nurse, who managed it quickly and dried Jim off. They put him in the bed and wrapped him with all the blankets in the flat. The clothes were easy enough to dry. They hung them from the window for the baking hot air of the fires. Then Katerina went into the sitting room, leaving Tessa to sit with Jim and hold his hand. It was so strange to be again in this position of standing by the bed of the man she loved. Waiting. Hoping. Jim was... Jim. Exactly as he had been all those years ago. Except for the marks of the Silent Brothers. He was Jim. The boy with the violin. Her Jim. Age had not consumed him, as it had her will, but he might be taken from her all the same. Tessa reached up to her jade pendant, hidden beneath her collar. She sat and waited and listened to the roar and the wail outside as she held his hand. "I am here, James," she said in her mind. "I am here, and I will always be here." Tessa only let go of Jim's hand to occasionally go to the window to make sure the fires did not come too close. There was a halo of orange all around. The fires were only a few streets away. It was strangely beautiful, this terrible blaze. The city was burning. Hundreds of years of history, ancient beams and books were alight.
"They mean to burn us out this time," Katerina said, coming up behind her friend.
Tessa had not heard her enter.
"This ring of fire, it goes around St. Paul's. They want the cathedral to burn. They want to break our spirits."
"Well," Tessa said, pulling the curtain closed, "they won't succeed."
"Why don't we go and make a cup of tea?"
Katerina said.
"He'll be sleeping for some time."
"No, I need to be here when he wakes." Katerina looked at her friend's face.
"He means a great deal to you," she said.
"Jim, Brother Zachariah, and I have always been close."
"You love him,"
Katerina said. It was not a question. Tessa squeezed a handful of curtain in her fist. They stood in silence for a moment. Katerina rubbed her friend's arm consolingly.
"I'll make the tea," she said. "I'll even let you have the last biscuits in the tin."
"Biscuits?" Tessa whirled around. Jim was sitting up. She and Katerina hurried to him. Katerina began checking his pulse, his skin. Tessa looked at his face, his dear and familiar face. Jim was back. He was here. Her Jim.
"It is healing," Katerina said. "You'll need to rest, but you will live. It was a narrow escape, though."
"Which is why I came to the best nurses in London," Jim said.
"Perhaps you can explain that wound you have," Katerina said. "I know where it comes from. Why were you attacked with a fairy weapon?"
"I was looking for information," Jim said, shifting himself painfully to sit up a bit higher. "My inquiries were not appreciated."
"Clearly, if you were attacked with a cataplasm, that is intended to kill. It does not wound. It is usually not survivable. Your Silent Brother markings gave you some protection, but..."
Katerina felt his pulse again.
"But," Jim said curiously. "I did not believe you would make it through the night," she said simply.
Tessa blinked. She knew it was serious. But the way Katerina said it hit her physically.
"You should perhaps avoid making those inquiries again," Katerina said, putting the blanket back over Jim. "I'll go and make the tea."
She left the room quietly, closing the door behind her,
leaving Tessa and Jim together in the darkness. The raid seems worse than any before tonight, Jim finally said. Sometimes I think the mundanes will do more harm to